It sure is, and I'm with Richard C. Hoagland, and we are broadcasting live from the Roswell UFO Festival here in Roswell, New Mexico. And in just a moment, we're going to have a real great time. We've got a treat for you because we've got Chase Masterson joining us from Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Dean Haglund, and we're going to also open up the phone lines. And Chase has kind of brought us a surprise, which we'll talk to you about right at the end of the half hour. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. We're live at the UFO Festival in Roswell, New Mexico. Yes, you can tell we are live. That is not canned claps. Those are real people. Richard C. Hoagland, you're introducing our next
real
guest.
Rotating people. Okay, Chase Masterson first became known for her. Now, don't do that. Come on. This is supposed to be a serious thing.
Oh, yeah, sorry, serious.
Please.
Chase first became known for her breakout role in Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Chase was voted the number one favorite science fiction actress on television by the TV Guide Online Readers Poll, as well as honored as one of the top 20 people to watch in Hollywood. And sitting here, I can tell you why. That was by Sci-Fi Universe Magazine. Anyway,
I voted.
Chase is often recognized, although I didn't recognize her because she changed her hair color, from her role as the featured guest star in the Emmy Award-winning episode of ER. You might recognize her from her role as commanding officer Callie O'Grady in Stephen King's Frozen.
Oh, yeah.
Chase? Hi, Chase.
Wow, that was a doozy there. Thank you so much, Richard. Nice to be here.
And the other guy making all that noise over there in the corner is Dean Haglund, best known for his role as Langley on X-Files. He's also been seen in the X-Files spinoff entitled The Lone Gunman. That's a great show.
Thank you so much.
And Dean is currently exploring comedy, inventing things, working on his comic book.
I have a comic book out, yes. That's
good for you.
I fancy myself a bit of a cartoonist.
Well, you know what? That is a very creative person who does it. Welcome.
Ooh,
thank you. Thank you for being here.
How do you like this festival, both of you?
Oh, my gosh. It's amazing.
It's really a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I personally just went out on the bus tour over to the crash site.
I was going to say I did, too. It's absolutely the
eerie.
Trip of a lifetime. It really is.
And it is 3 hours long.
Okay, we're going to take calls with both of you half hour as well. This time is going to fly by. But both of you are, I think, giants in the science fiction Hollywood field.
Wow.
And it's kind of neat to have you both here.
I've been on a diet, so I'm not trying to be a giant in the field.
And we are both blonde. So
yes, you are. When you were in Star Trek Deep Space Nine, did you have a good time doing that?
Oh, my gosh. It was an amazing experience, and it really still is because it brings us to this kind of event, and you meet people, you know, from all walks of life and in science fiction, science fact. I met a couple of real aliens today, too. So it was,
really?
Yeah, it's been a phenomenal experience
South
overall.
Of the border.
All of the above, baby.
I tell you, you've got a great fan base, Chase.
Oh, thanks.
Absolutely incredible. Some of them are calling already.
Wow.
Well, they are a loyal bunch, and I'm very thankful for that.
And of course, Dean, I have seen you at a couple conferences before, so you get into this stuff.
I get into this stuff. You know, as an actor, I was researching my role, and I played a conspiracy theorist, so I started meeting people like Dr. Roger Lear and Jordan Maxwell and having lunch with them and getting their information that I could incorporate into my character. And now we've become good friends, so I often come to these conventions and hang out with them, and it's really cool.
All right, Richard, the scientist, what do you think of these two?
Yikes, these two. Don't get him started.
Notice how
his mouth is open, and nothing is coming out of it, which is a first for Richard.
There is not a twit of confusion between Chase and Dean. I got to tell you that.
We look like brother and sister.
It is scary. You can't take us anywhere.
That is true. Yeah. You do. You do have a family.
Often when we go to conventions together and we sit side by side.
From the planet Zeta Reticuli, both of you.
Oh, yeah, exactly. My favorite.
Let me ask Chase a question. Mm-hmm. Before you got into the Star Trek universe, did you understand what you were getting into in terms of people who really want that future?
You know, I actually did know the show quite well because, get this, I had a boyfriend who was such a Trekkie, that he only allowed me to call him during commercials.
Wow.
Okay?
Oh, my.
So, yeah.
Say something else. Only allowed to call him Picard. That would have been really
nice. Yikes. Well, there you go. Who's sorry now? No, but I did have a very strong familiarity, yes, with the show, and I love the show. But now, you know, really getting to see it firsthand – it's an entirely, you know, much richer, more intense experience. It's amazing. And you can't beat the loyalty of these folks and the fact that it brings you onto other projects, new films, things that crop up constantly.
When you auditioned for the part, did you have to do anything weird, funny accents or anything
like
that?
Yes, but I can't tell you here.
What?
No. George. I had a very different envisioning of my character, Lita, than the producers actually ended up going with. But it was something that I worked on extensively with cast members of Next Gen, just people that I knew and met, and I was like, what do I do to get on this show? It was actually the one show I prayed to be on, largely because I knew the fan base was so intense and because the show was so quality.
Absolutely. And Dean, when you were doing X-Files.
Yes.
Great series. I wish it would continue.
Thank you.
I really would. It had its life,
yeah.
But man, you must have had a great time doing
it. It was so much fun. It was a lot of work. I mean, we did 16-hour days. Every episode they shot to make it look like a feature film. The production values were through the roof. So it was a lot of hard work, but it was really a great time doing it.
Okay. My conspiratorial bent forces me to ask this question.
Please do.
How much of what you guys did was actually for real?
Well, here's the thing. The writers had an incredible library. When you went into the writer's office of Vince Gilligan or Frank Spotnitz, they didn't have the Sid Fields How to Write a Screenplay books. They had the religious rites of Mithra and the rare 16th century traits of French's, right. bizarre stuff.
Pre-Da Vinci Code.
Pre-Da Vinci Code stuff.
Did you ever see the episode where they tried to deal with a face on Mars?
I did.
With the astronaut?
Yeah, space, wasn't it?
It was a space one. It was a space one. He was inhabited by this ghost that came.
And that was actually based on a lot of your work, I think, because Chris Carter had your book on the faces of Mars.
Did you know that, Richard?
No, but—
Did you not know that? That was in his office.
No, but let me tell you, the one night that Art had him on was the night that Mike Barra and I had published something on the show. We actually did a commentary, and it's on the web,
okay.
EnterpriseMission.com. It's there, and I think it's labeled X-Files something or other.
Right.
It's the one time that Carter called Art and demanded he be allowed on the show the next night.
Oh.
And Art sent me, called me up and said, send in some questions, which I did.
Yes, you did.
And Carter answered the question, is this for real? And he talked about how certain intel people will come up to him and say, how can you be so close? So I didn't know specifically he had monuments on the shelf. But I got to tell you, X-Files is now like Star Trek. The sun never sets on X-Files.
Right.
So you can see a rerun anytime, day or night, 24/7 on your local satellite channel. I was watching the Face on Mars episode because initially I was very put off by it. It would not have been what I would have done, even in the strictly entertainment mode.
Right.
And I'm watching, and suddenly there's a close-up on a digital clock where a key plot point of the shuttle mission surviving – and I said, holy cow, he knows, because the close-up was 19 hours, 50 minutes, 19.5.
Let's take some calls. Now, watch this great technology. I mean, here we are in Roswell, New Mexico.
Roswell.
I push a button and go, you're on Coast to Coast, west of the Rockies. Hi there.
Well, hello. How you doing today?
We're well. Who's your question for? Go ahead. Take it away. And where are you calling from?
My question is for the Star Trek, or the Star Trek character.
Hey,
Star Trek character.
That would be Chase. Okay, I have all the movies of Star Trek. I have the Deep Space Nine, and this is the first time in my life I've ever got on Coast to Coast.
Well, and, congratulations. Wow. Me too.
I mean, I recorded that way back when before they canceled it all.
Down
the last battle of Deep Space Nine.
Okay. Well, thank you.
It is damn cool. I love it.
All right. Hey, where are you calling from? And do you have a question?
San Antonio, Texas.
Okay.
I was going to say, do you think that the technology today that you showed back then is showing right now, like on all the computers and
all right,
else?
That's a good question. Chase, all that technology you had in the show.
Well, absolutely.
You think we've got it now?
I absolutely know that there have been so many things that, that Gene Roddenberry only dreamed of and that are, currently in our technology today. And I can only hope that we'll, you know, continue to have those things and discover those things. I mean, wouldn't it be great to get it to get to go into warp drive or, you know, I think that those things are certainly inspiring to physicists and scientists.
Have you heard about the light machine?
What's the light machine?
The light machine is an LED device, computer program that looks right, like something right out of McCoy's sick bay.
Okay.
It's being used by the Air Force, by the Army, by the Marines, by the Navy, by NASA in the space station and the shuttle, and Robin and I have one.
You have one?
We have one, and what you do is you, if you
what
have
do
a
you
problem,
do with it?
We
well,
want one.
If,
yeah,
if,
I want one.
If you have a sprain, if you're coming down with a cold, if you have a lung infection, if you are bitten by an insect, a huge range of maladies are amenable because this thing is a computer-controlled frequency pulser.
Is this like Edgar Cayce talked about a long time ago about ultraviolet light?
No. This is more like Royal Rife.
Well, I'm telling Dr. Bashir this one because this sounds really cool.
But it's a Rife machine with infrared and visible technology, not radio frequencies.
Oh, I see.
But it would be so familiar in McCoy's sick bay.
Right.
And it is an absolutely quintessential demonstration of how Gene's vision has now come true.
How big is this machine,
Richard? It's palm sized.
And where did you get it?
Yeah.
Robin can tell you. After the show.
Yeah. After the show. Tell us,
but
Robin.
Now I heard that in the U.S. they were going to outlaw any cures that require
they're working
audio
on that. They're working on
our,
that. Yep. If it's not FDA approved.
If it's not FDA approved. If it's not a pharmaceutical thing, that they were not going
so
to
guess,
allow that anymore. Are you holding an illegal cure?
No, I believe this is FDA approved.
It is.
It's not like under the wire.
No.
I'm not sure. Okay, let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there. Where are you calling from?
Hi, George. This is Amy from Chicago.
Hi, Amy. Go ahead.
Well, I have a little question for Chase. And,
Chase?
First of all,
hi,
I
Amy.
Want to agree with Dean that the production values on both X-Files and anything Star Trek were absolutely amazing.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you so much.
It's fabulous stuff.
We worked hard to get that.
Yeah, slaving day and night.
Yeah.
No, thank you, Amy. We agree. It's not every actor that gets to be on such a quality show in every way. It's
true.
A major blessing.
True.
Absolutely. Any idea if there's going to be a DS9 movie or another incarnation of Star Trek coming up?
Alas, there will not be a DS9 movie.
What?
That's something that, yeah,
how can you
hate to break the
sure
news.
Travesty.
You know, I mean, I think the writers and pretty much the cast, but mostly the writer-producers, just decided when the show was over that it had really run its course. And it certainly could have gone longer. I mean, when we stopped at the end of 7 seasons, we were the number one syndicated show in the world, I'm sure X-Files was, wasn't it?
Number two.
Oh.
Yeah, after DS9.
I think that there is a general consensus that there has been a little too much Star Trek as of late. I mean, I think the fan base has really been inundated.
A little oversaturated.
I think so. And, you know,
Enterprise screwed it up for everyone.
Well, pretty much, but we don't have to talk
anything
about that.
Just saying.
So with the new movie coming out, I think, you know, they're unfortunately doing making a huge effort to mainstream that, I believe. And I'm just hoping that they don't really alienate the core fan base because they really should, I think, pay attention to the loyalty that's there. And I hope that they stay true
to... Gene was on to something.
What?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You know, the old axiom, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Pretty much, yeah.
And then Enterprise, I'm sorry, felt like they broke it.
Well, and I think that really science fiction fans generally have an eye for I think they have integrity in terms of the content of their shows, and I think that's what they insist upon.
And
so
they're
if
very
it becomes,
critical, Chase, aren't they?
I believe so, and well, they should be, because I mean, sci-fi having the ability to speak to people in such allegorical ways doesn't need to be, you know, some it doesn't need to be, you know, a trashy.
By the way,
too sexy show
you
in space.
You two are what's good about Hollywood. By the way, you really are.
Thank you, George. So are you.
No, you really do. You make it. So many people who are actors and actresses, you get this stigma of who they are, and here you are. You're with people. You're giving back. And I know Chase is involved in charities. Dean, you're doing all kinds of things. You're good people first and foremost.
Thank you.
And that's so
thank
important.
You. That's
wow.
Nice.
How many jerks from Hollywood do you get on this show, George?
And do you tell them that they're
too
jerks?
Many, too many. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, oh, we got another jerk from Hollywood.
You guys are the epitome of Hollywood.
I had Pat Boone, but I didn't call him a jerk.
you know, George, picking up on what you just said, the thing that makes Chase and Dean different is they got into the spirit of the concept of the writer and the creator of the show.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And when you have actors that can immerse themselves in that world and make that world as much of a reality as the world we all live in, mm-hmm. that's when you can sell the message. Remember, was it Barnum who said, don't, if you have a message.
P.T. Barnum?
Yeah.
P.T.
Barnum? Yeah. If you have a message to send, send a telegram, don't make a movie.
Right, Samuel.
Right.
Gene Roddenberry had a message. Mm-hmm. You know, I was very privileged to know him at a very early age, and he was one of those extraordinary showmen that could encapsulate his message in an entertaining surround, get actors of your caliber and quality to see the vision.
Yeah.
That's why I asked you, Chase, about did you understand what you were getting into? And your answer satisfied me that, yeah, you kind of got that thing that makes and made Star Trek unique. And it was the first show, as I remember, that actually had fans stand up to networks and say, you're not going to take it off the air.
Absolutely.
And NBC was forced to put it back on the air because of the fan reaction.
Now, Chase, I understand you've brought us a little present here.
I have indeed.
Play, but I want you – I've got about 45 seconds for you to kind of set the stage of your other career.
Thanks very much. Well, actually, a film that I'm in, which will be out early next year, is called Yesterday Was a Lie, and I sing four songs in that. And as a prelude to that, which I consider to be about the peak of my career so far – I'm very excited about it. I did two CDs. One is called Thrill of the Chase.
Yes.
And there's also another CD called Ad Astra. We sell them on my website at chaseclub.com. And we raise a lot of money for charity. Right now we're
good for you. And we're live at the UFO Festival in Roswell, New Mexico. Richard C. Hoagland, he beamed himself aboard, and he's co-hosting with me. Richard, who's behind the secret door right now?
An old, old friend, James, Jordan Maxwell, who I've known, we were calculating before, since 1991. It doesn't seem that long. He's probably the preeminent researcher and independent scholar in the field of the occult and religious philosophies. Jordan knows more about the occult and the political reasoning behind the occult, particularly in terms of certain things going on in this government, than almost anybody that I can think of, and I can't think of anybody else, so he's probably, as Aldrin used to say, number one on the runway. He served for 3.5 years as the religion editor of Truth Seeker magazine, which is America's oldest free thought journal, and his work in exploring the hidden foundations of Western religions and secret societies creates extraordinary responses from audiences around the world, and what he's going to talk to you about tonight is going to be another one of those high data points. Jordan?
Hey, Jordan, good to have you back. And I've got to tell you, Richard, Jordan is such a friend of Coast to Coast. When he heard that I was going to go ahead with this Ouija board experiment, and he'll address that here in a second, he sent me probably one of the most elaborate emails I've read in a long time, warning me not to do it. But I'll tell you how much class he has. Knowing how bullheaded I am and that I'm going to go ahead and do this, he's going to be in the studio with me. Thanks, Jordan.
Well, I'm honoring your request because I have such a high regard for your person.
I feel much better, George, that he's going to be there.
Yeah, and Rosemary Ellen Guiley will be there.
Because I am not a fan of this idea.
I know it.
Of all the ideas you've had, you know.
And many of them have been brilliant.
Do you want me to be very, very honest?
Sure.
I think this is the dumbest idea you have ever come up with, bar none. And the reason I say that is because I'm not an occultist. But I'm a physicist, and there is a science here. There's a hyper-dimensional science that I've now got decades of database from the Russians on. And what I'm concerned about is that you're going to open a gate. And I understand why you're doing it, I think. And I understand your position that it's the board is a toy. It's who's uh-huh. doing it. But the factor that I don't think you've taken into account is that you're going to do this for millions of people. And if you look at a bell curve, if you look at, you know, the classic population mm-hmm. differentiation, most of those people are going to be okay.
You can't talk me out of this.
I'm not trying to. What I'm trying to do is to inform the audience of my apprehensions. And the apprehensions are based on the physics, that there are those people in that audience on that night who may not have the intentions that you and the majority of the audience will have.
Jordan, how come you felt so strongly, one, to be there, and two, to tell me not to do it?
Because for 46 years, I have involved myself in the world of the occult. And if there's one thing I understand is the darkness of the spirit world. And I am totally convinced that the Ouija board, with all due respect, represents the darkest force that you can bring to your home and bring into your life.
If I tell you this, and I kind of hinted about it yesterday on the program, if I, in a near-death experience, which not even my staff knows about yet, because I haven't told anybody, that occurred 7 years ago, if I saw something that I must see if it's going to be there again, would you feel a little differently about this?
No, I don't think so.
You wouldn't?
I think that I am totally sure that with what Richard said, I would agree with. I, you know, it's your privilege to do what you wish, and I am honored that you would want me with you. But I do believe that what you...
If they come out and grab me, they're going to grab you first. No. That's why I want you there.
And I was kind of concerned about that, yes. Because the board might end up talking to me. And
they'll take the big guy before they get to me. Believe me.
But anyway, I think that it will be very interesting. But see, when you're opening up yourself to... what I would call the dark side. What you're doing is opening up the whole listening world to the dark side.
We'll find out. When you were with me for a full program some time ago, you disappeared right there at
this
the bottom.
This was back in 2005.
Yeah. You disappeared. You were gone.
Yes.
Something happened.
The telephone company shut my phone off.
While you were on the air with
while
us.
I was on
a national broadcast.
Yes.
Why?
Well, obviously, because of what I happened by chance to be talking about. And I would like to tell you tonight the rest of the story.
Okay, I got a couple minutes left. Go ahead.
Because
then we gotta get to Roger Lear.
I got shut off the telephone. I was being interviewed by you.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, the phone went dead. And when it went dead, a few seconds later, I held on to see if maybe there was just something wrong with the line. It came back alive. And I heard people walking around inside of an office. And they're talking to each other.
I never
other.
Knew that.
Oh, yes.
That's why you've been wanting to get to me.
Absolutely. Because there was a guy in there talking with some others, and his words were, somebody's going to have to deal with this guy. And that scared me because I knew this was government. Only government has the opportunity to tell the telephone company, shut this phone now. And when it went down, I heard a man walking around. You could hear him walking around an office. And he said to someone else, somebody's going to have to deal with this guy. And that's scary, hearing a government guy saying something like that. And then all of a sudden, somebody said, the line, something about the line.
Like they knew it was still up.
Like it was still
and
up.
And then,
yeah.
Right, and they hung it up.
Unbelievable. There's more on this to come. Jordan, thanks for dropping in behind
the
green
door. Thank you very much.
Stay safe, my friend.
There'll be more of Jordan Maxwell, and of course, he'll be with me on July 25th when we do this Ouija board experiment for that entire program. Up next, Dr. Roger Lear. We'll see what's new with him with Alien Implants on Coast to Coast AM. What an absolutely fast night tonight in Roswell, New Mexico, where my car is double parked, but I don't care because the police here like me, and I won't get a ticket. It could be, too. Anyways, Richard C. Hoagland, introduce our next special guest.
To my left, all you radio folks out there in Radio Land, is Dr. Roger Lear. Roger is a very good friend and went through something like I went through, a little bit of a ticker problem. He is the author of Aliens and the Scalpel and 8 additional books on alien implants and the UFO subject, which has been one of the most important leaders in the physical evidence research involving ufology. I mean, ultimately, UFOs have got to involve physical evidence, and Roger has been at the cutting edge – sorry about that, Roger – in getting to
very,
that evidence,
very good, Richard.
Which he will talk to you about in a moment. He and his team have now – I think it's been, what, 13 surgeries that you've done on the subject?
13, the last one just a short time ago.
Okay. They have removed something like 14 separate and distinct objects that are suspected – on grounds that he will obviously talk about, of being real physical alien implants. They have been investigated scientifically by some of the most prestigious laboratories in the world, and the findings have baffled, and the comparisons have been made to some meteorite samples, which I'm sure Roger will tell us about. Dr. Lear is currently working on a major motion picture entitled Earth's Original Sin. Roger?
Thank you. Thank you, Richard. Thank you, George, for having me on the show.
Absolutely.
Well, I suppose you want to know what's new.
Yes. When you mentioned a new operation, who was it, what was it, and what did you find?
Well, it was just done a couple of weeks ago, a gentleman in his 60s with an object in the knee. And he had quite a good history of abduction experiences. Those types that are described by Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs almost right down to the T. He even had a memory that one morning he woke up in bed after having a very strange dream and found a drop of blood on his knee.
Hmm.
So he looked, and he didn't find any injury. There wasn't any portal of entry, and he couldn't find any irritation. The skin wasn't a different color. There was no sign of an obvious scar, so...
But there was a fresh drop of blood.
A fresh drop of blood. So he wiped it off and wondered what was going on. Well, he began to have a little discomfort, a superficial discomfort in the knee. And by the time he finally contacted me, which was some years after this happened, he was having some difficulty in the superficial skin because as you move the knee, of course, the skin and the tissues underneath move. So every time he moved the knee, why, he would have some discomfort. So he contacted me, and he was one of the few individuals who was already prepared.
Because, you mean psychologically?
No, he was prepared physically because he had looked at my website.
He knew what to do.
Knew what to do. So upon initial telephone contact, when I asked him, which I usually do, of patients who think they may have an object in your body, do you have an X-ray? He said, yes. I not only have an X-ray, but I also have an MRI.
And you're saying, thank you,
so,
God.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Please send them to me. I gave him the address, and he was very compliant. Sent them along, and we took them to our radiologist who looked at it and said, yes, there is a definitive object, and told us where in the knee that it was. So one of the suggestions that was made.
And how deeply embedded was it?
We couldn't tell from the initial X-ray just how deep it was because an X-ray projects the object. So it could be at any level in any area.
So it was just one X-ray from one angle.
It was two angles, which showed that there was an object there, but you can't say exactly what its placement is because the X-ray beam itself projects it into the tissue farther than it is.
Well, how do you get something like that, Roger?
Well,
you have to dig away at the knee?
I hope not, George. I hope not, George. You remember that show, of course.
You're scaring me.
Right? So what we did was we asked him to get a CAT scan done. Now, a CAT scan is different because it can pinpoint the exact area and the measurement of the object right down to a gnat piece of a millimeter.
Okay.
So we did that, and he was very compliant, had the CAT scan done. He sent us the CAT scan. The gentleman lives in Colorado but has relatives and a mother who lived in San Diego. We sent him in the interim a whole packet full of questions, which is part of our routine criteria and protocols. And then we graded the possibility of whether he was an abductee, and he came out.
How big was the object?
The object was about a little over a centimeter in length and about maybe as thick as a pencil lead.
That's large.
Yeah, it was a pretty good size object. So we got the grading done, and that showed us that he had about a 63% possibility of actually being an abductee. So here's a pretty good chance that the guy is telling you a true story and of his involvement. Mm-hmm. He had a number of different incidents to which he remembered consciously. We don't allow these individuals who undergo hypnotic regression prior to having a surgical procedure done, basically because we don't want the criticism that, oh, you guys put, you know, crazy ideas into the guy's head.
Right. You're leading him.
Leading him, whatever. So we try and do this as scientifically as possible, because as you know, I'm just the messenger. If you don't like the message, you know, don't kill the messenger. So we did all that, and then we got him to come back to California. He came up for an initial interview, and at the time he came up, we did a number of superficial examinations using a Gauss meter, in which we got a 4 milligauss field coming out of the area. And then we used a radio frequency detector lock, and we also detected a radio frequency.
Like an RFID chip.
Right. So we wrote down it's a complex megahertz frequency, which I did not bring. Mm-hmm. I knew you would ask.
So when you ping it, it pings back.
Yeah. So with this data and with the photographic and other data that we had, we went on and we went ahead and scheduled the surgery. Now, one of the things that we were lacking for this particular case is the ability to go ahead and do this definitively without using an expensive assisted device called a C-arm. So we had to figure out a way without doing what you were suggested doing before, digging a hole in this man, looking at it for an extended period of
ruining
time.
His knee.
So we came up with a joint idea between the surgeon, the radiologist, and myself that right prior to the surgery, we're going to send him back to X-ray, and we'll do a limited CAT scan in which the radiologist will mark the exact
area where
it is.
So that will be done.
That was done.
Was done.
And then he immediately went from there. We went into surgery.
So you did get it.
We got it. We took it out. And
what does it look like?
And what is it?
It looked exactly like the other five rods that I had taken out, which were little metallic rods covered with this very strange gray biological coating.
And you have no idea what they are.
We know what they're made of. We have a theory as to what they could possibly be and what they do.
What's the theory?
The theory is that they are devices for gaining information that has something to do with the human body. They're not tracking devices. They're not behavioral altering devices, but it's a device for learning something that's going on in the body.
Maybe environmental change and they want to monitor something?
It's possible that they are devices for environmental change, but my particular pet theory, based on what we've learned from children today, some people call them millennium children, star children, indigo children. I think that the human race is undergoing possibly a mass genetic manipulation. These devices will tell somebody, some intelligence, what progress has been made along those lines.
Let's take a call before we have to say goodnight to you, Roger. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Dan. Pick it up. There you go. Hi there.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was in my room, in my living room one night, and I had a strange dream, and I saw these 4-foot aliens. They lifted me up in the air, levitated me, and they were sticking silver metallic tools in my orifices, every orifice.
And are these materials there now?
I don't know. That's what I want to find out, if they stuck an implant in me.
All right, Roger, how does somebody – no, I guess he does what this individual has done, and that is go and get it checked.
Correct, George. If there's any suspicion that you have an object in your body, it shouldn't belong there. Go to a physician and get an X-ray taken. If there's something there that doesn't belong there, and the physician agrees, you're welcome to get in touch with me and send me the film.
Roger's working on a major motion picture entitled Earth's Original Sin. His website, well, you can find the link at coasttocoastam.com, but it is alienscalpel.com. That's a scary website address. alien scalpel?
Cutting edge. Come.
Well, George, you know me. I don't scare you, do I?
Yeah, with those fang teeth of yours.
Oh, that's my dentist. Blame my dentist.
I'm sorry. Those are your teeth.
Yes. That's my natural look.
We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.